Welcome to the Team TB 813 podcast, which is associated with Team TB 813, which you can follow us on Twitter at that handle, and also be sure to check out team813.com, which covers all of your Rays, Buccaneers, and Bolts news.
Welcome to the Team Tampa Bay 813 podcast. This is your host, John Miles. This is episode 3. And we're going to be talking with Ulysses from the Locked On Rays podcast. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
No problem. All right, let's go ahead and get right on into it. First, I know this will be your first time calling in. Give the fans a little bit of background on you and about your fanship with the Rays and stuff.
Right. Well, I'm a lifelong baseball fan. I'm actually from Venezuela, so I started with my fandom of baseball pretty young, watching the Winter League there and some major league players coming down to Venezuela. And then when I moved to the U.S., I started following the Rays here and there. But 2008 was definitely such a magical run that, you know, they got to me. And I've been a Rays fan ever since that magical run.
That's pretty good here. I grew up, you know, going to the first Rays games in 98, and it was something that, you know, I haven't been able to be back because I've been out of the state of Florida for quite a while, and I haven't gone to any of the Rays playoff games or anything, but, like, it to me, like, it was really cool because I was growing up on the north side of Tampa and making that trip over to St. Pete when the Rays just started. And, you know, getting to see people like, you know, Canseco and Fred McGriff and Wade Boggs and, you know, getting to see all these Hall of Fame type players on, you know, one of the very first rosters. And it just, I fell in love with the Rays and I've been a Rays fan ever since.
It's definitely been a difficult journey to where we are right now, but it's been definitely a joy to watch, no matter if it's a down season or not. Like you said, I mean, those first teams were
pretty stacked, and I don't see how they couldn't win looking back
no pitching. I can tell you that much. No pitching, and they had a great stacked lineup, like you said, but the pitching was a little bit more than, imagine the pitching that we've had since 2008 paired up with that lineup. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, it would have been ridiculous, man. But anyway, we'll go ahead and get into the big news with Tommy Pham being traded to San Diego for a prospect and someone else. I can't remember his name right off the top of my head. What do you make of this deal, and is this actually a good deal for the Rays?
Well, yeah, when we woke up and saw these news as a Rays fan, I don't think anybody saw this coming. First of all, I think it was, you know, out of left field, literally, as they take Tommy Pham to San Diego, the Rays get Hunter Renfroe, who was a finalist for the Gold Glove this year, brings a lot of pop in 3 seasons. He's averaged about 30 home runs. So, you know, he's got some power from the right side of the plate. But just awful numbers on the on-base percentage, on the strikeouts, and on contact. The contact he makes is pretty good in the hard hit velocity. The active velocity is pretty good, just like Pham. So that's something that you can be thrilled about. But the on-base skills are not there, and the strikeouts are most definitely there. So he can, I think, will be a frustrating player to watch when he's not on offensively. And I think we're going to miss Tommy Pham's plate discipline the most, if anything. I know that some people said that he's kind of clunky in the outfield. I agree. He didn't look the best out there sometimes, and his running gaps were a bit frustrating to watch in the 2019 season. I mean, sometimes he even ended the game, I believe, against the Red Sox at the Trop. He was caught off guard on first base, and that's how the game ended. So that was frustrating, but I think people need to look at overall value more than anything, and the overall value of a Tommy Pham to one of Hunter Renfroe. I think Tommy Pham has the better overall value. And depending on what comes next with what the Rays are able to do, right now I don't see this as a success of a trade as it stands right now, pending other moves.
Yeah, I can agree. And the way I look at it, you know, at the initial reaction I had was pretty much kind of like Blake Snell, where he said big dick prospect or whatever exactly it was. But I'm like, who the hell is this? And then looking into it and then, you know, thinking, you know, trying to think about things, looking at the Moneyball aspect of it, you know, we've all seen the movie. And that was the biggest thing, was on base percentage. And it's just like this, the guys that we're getting in this trade, like they're not really that great for on base percentage. And it just, it seems like this is really not right now a good move. I mean, it might be later on, but what do you really think about things like the small things like that?
Well, I think it all depends on the next move, because let's look at how the outfield looked in 2019. You had Tommy Pham, you had Kevin Kiermaier, and you have Austin Meadows sharing time with Avi Garcia. So that's a formidable outfield. Now you're trading Tommy Pham for Hunter Renfroe, and you don't have Avi Garcia because he's a free agent. So it's awesome that you do have a better defender for next year in Renfroe. It's awesome that you have more power than you had last year. But who's going to supply all of the good things that Avi and Tommy Pham did from 2019? I think the winter meeting in San Diego, which are next week, are going to tell us a little bit more about the layout of the 2020 team, especially the outfield. And when this whole postseason started, or I should say when the break started, Eric Neander said they were looking for more offense, you know, and then they signed Zunino again, which he did nothing at the plate in 2019, and then you sign Renfroe and give up Tommy Pham. So what have you done essentially? The catching position stays the same. And in the outfield, you took out a lot of on-base percentage for Bond. Right now, you're at a negative. So what do I look at the little thing? I think Hunter Renfroe made more base running gaps than Tommy Pham did in 2019. By Pham graphs, Tommy Pham was graded at a 0.6, which is not great, but Hunter Renfroe is at a negative 0.4. So he made worse mistakes on the base path than Tommy Pham. Yes, he was a Gold Glove finalist, but a 33% strikeout rate, that's not that great if every time that you go up to the box, you have a 1 in 3 chances of striking out. So that's very much like Zunino. And then you talk about the lineup construction. You have now 3 guys that are in the lower 30% of strikeouts, maybe 4 if you include Kiermaier. So Kiermaier, Brandon Lau, Mike Zunino, and Hunter Renfroe, that's 4 guys in the starting lineup that have over 30% strikeout rates. It's not looking great.
It's not looking good for next year.
Definitely, I think a decline in the offensive production on the base paths for sure.
All right, and we'll get into some other news, even though it's technically not Rays, and we'll get into some news around the league. Is this a good thing or a bad thing for us that the Yankees are going after Gerrit Cole?
I think any team that would be lucky to have Gerrit Cole, especially if he's able to reproduce 2018 and 2019 again. All the numbers seem to think that he will be that guy, that he is that guy, which makes it a little bit unfortunate for Pittsburgh Pirates fans, because it seems like everybody that's good seems to, you know, do it after they leave Pittsburgh. And if Gerrit Cole is in the AL East, that's a game changer. I mean, not only because now the AL East is even more stacked and it's more problematic for a team like the Rays to compete. I mean, they were 7 games behind of the Yankees at the end of the season. Now with Gerrit Cole, that means more pitching. That means a possible, yeah, they meet 18 times throughout the year. So how many times do you miss Gerrit Cole in those outings? It'll be very difficult for the Rays now to do that. But around the league, what does that do? It makes the AL West seem a little bit more gettable for teams like Oakland. For teams like the Angels, if they do something on their pitching side, because we know what the Angels can do with the lineup. That's a good lineup, but what can they do with their pitching? So maybe the AL West gets even more competitive by Gerrit Cole leaving it. So him, he's such a big piece. You will definitely see the ripples of his signing wherever he goes.
Yeah, because to me that just it feels like you're going to get stabbed, because that's just another slap in the face, I guess you can say, that the Rays are going to have even harder time catching up with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Now, right. I mean, I know we were able to get past the Red Sox this last year, and if we could have won several more games instead of hitting that losing streak that we did mid-season, we could have actually won the division. And I know that hurt looking at it now, but is this overall a bad move for the Rays?
Regarding Gerrit Cole?
Yeah. I mean, do you think it'll make it more difficult for the Rays to win the East or to be able to catch the Yankees? I mean, do we end up like in a similar scenario where we have to catch them and end up 5 to 10 games back in September and October?
I think every year will be a challenge for a team that's not only challenged by their monetary constraints, but by the monetary flexibility of the other two giants in the division and the Red Sox and the Yankees. So yeah, obviously when you put a Cy Young caliber guy in his peak, like Gerrit Cole is right now, that's, you mean if you're looking at a president, I mean, you can look at 2009 as one of them, when the Yankees signed everybody, A.J. Burnett, Cece Sabathia, they got Teixeira, and they went on to win the World Series. Is that what they're doing with getting Gerrit Cole and trying to buy another championship? Maybe.
Yeah. All right, so what else is there that we can look forward to for the 2020 season?
Well, I think in the winter meetings should set us up real nice to talk a lot about Rays baseball for the next 3 months until pitchers and catchers report. Let's see if they can get another catcher. They talked about that. Maybe they don't feel comfortable with only Mike Zunino and Michael Perez behind the dish, and they can do something about that. Perhaps they get another outfielder to pair up with Hunter Renfroe and provide some more on-base skills. Dominguez Santana is out there. Maybe an older guy with DH skills like Edwin Encarnacion could be in play. An old friend like Steven Souza Jr. could be a name that the Rays look into. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but having said how negative I think in a vacuum that fan deal is right now without any pending moves, there is no reason to expect that the Rays won't be obviously in the hunt once more. They've got the pitching. They've got the best pitching in the league. The whole staff is just incredible because of their talent and their skills and what they can do best and how the Rays are using those skills. I don't think Oliver Drake or a Chaz Rowe would be as effective in another team, because the Rays know what their best strength is, and then they exploit that strength. So I think 2020 will be a great year for Rays baseball, and it'll be a very exciting offseason for sure.
All right, and let's get into the whole debate. What do you think about the statement between coming out from the ownership about the whole splitting sister city thing?
It's very disappointing as a Tampa Bay resident to hear that the owner does not feel like the region is baseball worthy of 81 home games. That's for sure. It's always good to be the innovator, but never to be the innovator of having less home games being played in your ballpark. So obviously it's frustrating as a fan. Now, if you're being a little bit more economically savvy and maybe you want to look at this unbiased, could it work? Yeah, of course it could work. I mean, you're dipping into two TV markets, which would give you more money, which would increase your payroll, which now instead of having a $70 million budget at the most, you can now play with the big boys and, you know, have a $150 million budget. So wouldn't that be nice as a Tampa Bay Rays fan and not go to the offseason saying, oh, gee, I really hope we get somebody for $4 million and say, you know what, let's play and see if we actually can get Gerrit Cole by chance. You know, that would be nice. But overall, I don't think that the Sister City Complex is going to happen. Obviously, before 2027, no way. As Kreisman said, that deal is dead. Now, post-2028, if it happens, unfortunately, I don't see St. Petersburg being in play for that. If anything, it could be Tampa. And by Tampa, I mean literal Tampa, Hillsborough County. Maybe they take 40 games and another city could after 2027, the lease expires. Or it could be two different markets, and it could be Nashville and Montreal or Nashville and Raleigh. I mean, I know Vegas could want to be into the expansion role, or maybe they give it all to Montreal. Who knows? Nobody knows right now. I don't think even Stu Sternberg knows right now what's going to happen.
All right, and also, what do you think about a couple of the signees that we went through the last week or two? Starting out with O'Grady coming over from the Reds.
I think he's going to be a very interesting candidate. If anything, I think once you have O'Grady, that's your replacement for Guillermo Heredia. And Heredia, I think, did a fine job as a fifth outfielder. Good glove, not so much of the bat, but nobody expected really anything impressive from the box. So if anything, I think he did a pretty good job for what he was asked to do. I think O'Grady has incredible AAA numbers. He's a 2020 guy. I think he had 28 home runs in AAA, so definitely some pop, 20 steals. That's nice. And he can cover all outfield positions and first base. So I think that's a really nice get up for the Rays for essentially nothing. And, Zunino, the signing, I know everybody hopes that he can bounce back, but he was so terrible at the plate that even if he does bounce back, how offensive is a bounce back to somebody who had 9 home runs in about 90 games and, you know, was disastrous with the K rate? I think he struck out about 33% of the time that he was at the box. So how much of a bounce back is it? It would have to be so big to even be relevant as a positive, and I don't think he's got that in him when he's almost close to 30 now.
All right, and what do you think about the different awards that the Rays have been getting? You know, Cash is the youngest manager since 95 to go to the postseason. You know, Neander's won Executive of the Year. You know, also the Rays have been franchise of 2019. Winning that award as well. So, I mean, like, what does that say? I mean, do we, to those who want to doubt what we're going through at the moment, and we all know it's difficult because we all want to put our 2 cents in, but what do you think that says for baseball in Tampa Bay?
I think that it says that the organization is run well, which, can give some confidence to those who don't believe in the Sister City concept. I don't. But it kind of just tells you, you know, the people that are running the show know what they're doing. And they've shown that they know what they're doing when the youngest manager gets into the playoff and with the lowest payroll in baseball, essentially, at least in the league, you make it to the playoffs when you're playing in the same division as two monsters in the Red Sox and the Yankees in the last 11 seasons, there's only four teams that have won 90 games over seven seasons, and that's the LA Dodgers, the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox, and the Tampa Bay Rays. So, I mean, they definitely know what they're doing on the field. That gives you some encouragement to say, you know what, maybe the Sister City concept idea, although crazy, wouldn't be so bad, because it seems like they've got pretty smart people in the organization, and that should give hope to everybody who's a Rays fan.
All right, man. Well, is there anything else you any other news that you got that you might be able to give a little insight on?
Well, you know, I think if you're a Rays fan, you should be excited to hear what happens here in the winter meetings. The next week, I think, should be very exciting. We've got two spots open on the 40-man roster, which means I think we'll be seeing some really good moves. I think 2020 will be very exciting. It'll be the beginning of the window, really. I think we were early in 2018, and we followed it up with the playoffs in 2019, and we were one game away to really shaking up the baseball world. And I think 2020 will keep on that track. And thank you for having me on. And you know, everybody can stay up to news on your podcast. They can listen to me and Kevin on the Locked On Rays podcast. And really, thank you so much for having me, man.
Yeah, no problem, Ulysses. If you ain't already, make sure you follow and subscribe to the Locked On Rays podcast. They'll be able to get you a little bit more Rays news than we will. But tell everybody else how they can get a hold of you on social media and such.
Of course, you guys can follow us at Locked On Rays, or you can follow me personally at Sambrano Ulysses. And we have all the Rays stuff you guys need every day from Monday to Friday. And you know, we'll be very exciting. It'll be very exciting to see what the Rays do in 2020 for sure.
All right, before I let you go, man, let me get a little bit of a 2020 prediction. What do you feel the Rays will do next year?
I do think we're going to get another bat. That's for sure. You can't go into 2020 without a proven bat. If that's a veteran, I think it would be even better. Somebody that's proven. I think Edwin Encarnacion would be that type of player. Yes, he's aged, but the guy does not stop producing. I mean, it's like 9-10 seasons in a row where he hit 30 bombs. I want that guy in that lineup. It's been a while since we've had consistent power. So I would like to see Edwin Encarnacion in 2020 lineup. I would also, you know, it would be nice to see a step up from the young guys, and especially with Brendan McKay, because I do think Yonny Chirinos or Ryan Yarbrough will be dealt, perhaps for a bat. So if one of those two guys is gone, then you slide in Brendan McKay in the fifth role of that rotation. So I expect a leap in results for Brendan McKay. I think he's got the stuff to be a really good major league pitcher, and I think we're going to see that in 2020.
All right, man. I know it's a little too early, but give me a win-loss prediction on how much of a difference you think this year will be.
All right. It's a little bit too early, so I could put my foot in my mouth, but I'll go with a 93 win season. I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult next year with the Yankees and the Red Sox trying to be a little bit more smart in how they spend their money, and that'll be a little bit more difficult for the Rays to do that, to compete. But I still see them in the postseason as a wild card for sure.
All right, man. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, man. You're always welcome on the show. If you haven't, check us out, Teammate 13. Subscribe, like, and all that good stuff. You can follow us on Twitter and all socials at TampaTB813. And we will catch you next time.